Hello and welcome to Manga Splain, a show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by me, Deb Aoki, David Brothers, Christopher Woodrow Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangasplain.com. And as you can probably tell by this intro, it is my week this week. And this week we are going once again into the wonderful, sparkly, flowery land of Josei manga. This time we're reading two volumes, much to Chip's chagrin. But it's important. The second volume is important. It is The Untouchable Midori-kun, Volumes 1 and 2 by Toyo Toyoda. Before we get too much further with it, let me read the description. Talk about meet-cutes. Misaki doesn't recognize her cute new neighbor when he comes to formally introduce himself, until he reminds her that they went to school together for years. But Midori Tachibana is no longer the awkward kid she remembers. He's the leader of Japan's hottest new idol group. But their fated meeting is cut short when he finds out that she's an adult film actress, and he can't be seen with her if he's to preserve his squeaky clean idol image. But can the chemistry between them be so easily erased? A sex-positive, sweet idol rom-com for fans of Tokyo Tarareba Girls and ex-enthusiasts. So.
Wait, did you say sex-enthusiasts?
Ex-enthusiasts.
Ex-enthusiasts.
Which I've never read.
Okay.
I don't know why they put that on the description because I've not read that one. But
sorry, what is an ex-enthusiast?
I don't know.
Like
a single letter X?
EX.
Oh, EX.
Ex, like your ex-boyfriend enthusiast.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they called out that book.
Sorry, is that a book title? Ex-enthusiast? Mm-hmm. I've never even... Yeah, that's...
You guys are so out of the loop on manga.
This is really...
I tell you, it's...
Could someone manga explain this to me? It's early here.
There's another manga called Ex-Enthusiasts.
Okay.
Is there?
I couldn't hear the italics in Deb's voice when she said Ex-Enthusiasts there. So I didn't know it was a proper title. Normally I hear italics.
Yeah.
I can smell yes, bulls as well, actually.
Those have really good covers. I haven't actually read Ex-Enthusiasts, but I've seen them, you know, around.
Oh, I'll have to look this up. Yeah. But anyway, we are digressing.
Is it?
It's a romantic comedy. Well, not really, are we?
It's typical manga explaining so far.
Yeah.
It's true. We're a little punchy.
Yeah.
This was a book that I picked up on a whim, and then I found myself really loving it and recommending it to people for a bunch of reasons. Partly because it was funny. The art wasn't like, you know, blowing me away, but the way that it made fun of itself, just kind of the kicker for me was the roses. Sparkly roses. Mm. So I figured now that we've read Rose of Versailles and we've seen the full on original sparkly roses thing, I thought maybe we could understand the humor and the joy of the Untouchable Midori-kun. But I will ask our most resistant to shoujo person. What he thought of it. Do tell, David Brothers. What did you think of this one?
I am resistant to shoujo, but I like josei.
Mm.
So I like this one. There was a moment, you know, on the first page, I was like, oh man, this art's kind of generic. I don't know where they're going with this. And then on the second page, her like squinting caricature kind of sold me on finishing the book at the very least, even if I wasn't super into it. But the story kind of caught me a little bit. Because I've read this kind of story before, but not like written and drawn for an audience of mostly women. Mm. You know, usually these, my neighbor's a porn star story is for like, I was going to say gross dudes, but I guess that's kink shaming. But you know what I mean? Like there's like a level of like pornographic aesthetic to these kinds of stories.
Gross dudes, but gross is positive.
Yeah.
Gross doesn't have to be
like,
negative.
Gross is a neutral descriptor.
Yeah.
Like when we use grotesque on the Baki episode. Yeah, like gross dudes, you know.
Yeah, exactly like
the gross aesthetic.
Like literary gross. But I mean, those stories very much are like either how can I sleep with as many women as possible for utterly selfish reasons, or all of these women want to sleep with me and I'm either super into it or not into it at all. And they're both like different kinds of power fantasies.
Mm.
And I like how this one was, this guy is super hot, has no boundaries, and he's a little dumb. But he still won't sleep with me. So like there's this whole like seduction and kind of, what's it called when you like withhold something from someone? Like basically
delayed
he's making her want him even more. Yeah.
He's teasing her.
I think there's definitely a bit of that. Yeah, for sure. And some of the jokes were like legit funny.
Yeah.
I had a good time with this one. Even took a few screenshots we can talk about later.
Oh, nice. Let's see. Let's ask Chris what he thought of this one.
I will play the chip role this week and just echo David entirely.
What does that mean?
Oh, did David say something? Right. Yeah, okay. What David said. That sounds great.
We coordinate before the show. It's about
yeah. Well, it's good that I'm exactly. good that I'm sandwiched in there because now he's gonna have to change everything he was gonna say. We'll see how this goes.
Oh no!
Yeah, he'll quick, rewrite your notes. No, this is I listened to the Baki episode like three times trying to get the show notes done and just a little bit done. And I started off the episode by going, "This is trash," and this is also trash, but it's more trashy, which I think I kind of love actually as well. I just had so much fun with it. It doesn't take a lot of brain power. It is incredibly light. Even they start to like tiptoe up to serious issues and then just sort of like do a pratfall on them. It's pretty fun for that. Like, it's a fun time. And I laughed out loud a couple times. There are some amazing little throwaway gag panels. The one I know we should probably save it out of the intro, but the one where he, I think it's in the second volume, is like, "Oh, and I had a crush on you back then. Everyone knew that I had a crush on you." And she's like, "Really?" And she's like, "Even my dog knew that I had a crush on you." And then there's the little inset drawing of the wiener dog that's just like, "I knew." It's like, I died when that came up. I actually I screen capped that one. I was going to the show notes for sure, but. Yeah, it's like, it starts off and you're like, "Oh, I'm not sure." But I had read the first chapter because Deb made me, because she was referencing the roses and something else we were doing, the sentient weirdo roses always appearing behind him because it's a shoujo hero. Yeah, I think this is like a fun one that could be rewritten to be like a tense seinen psychological thriller, like, but is not. It is super not. It keeps it so light at all times. So yeah, and I will say I got to the end of the second volume, and we'll talk about that in a sec, and I couldn't deal. I just went and read the third one. I needed to know what happened, because second volume is on a hell of a
there you go.
I am up to date, and I was kind of like, "Oh, 3 of 3 it says on Amazon. It's not 3 of 3. There's more to come. Kodansha has a fourth to-be-determined cover-up on their website, so I'm kind of annoyed at that, because I thought I was, like, getting the resolution, and no, it's just going to keep going.
Would you call that an anti-climax?
The third volume is weird. The third volume has a really different texture than the first two, and I liked it. I can't really spoil the third volume, because it only says we're talking about 1 and 2, but... It's not an anticlimax. They really get into these
or something.
Like they really get into these ideas of like
it got more grown up.
Whatever, but it also pulls back too and is like fluffy. It's like, oh my god, this is the fluffiest manga. So fluffy. Oh, and yeah, also shout out what David said to the expressions, like the crazy ass like expressions and like faces she pulls in this are like almost like One Punch Man level at a couple points. That was like shocking for a Jose manga. Yeah, I have a lot to say about the art actually. So yeah, no, I totally dug it, which means I guess, Chip, did you hate it?
I'm so torn right now because I agree with David, but I disagree with Chris all the time. So I'm just going to go right down the middle. I liked it. I agree with both of you. Like the expressions and like the one-off gags were really solid. If it wasn't for those, I probably wouldn't like the book. Like I found the... I'm starting to get used to the style of these stories. Mm. Almost any story with a male-female relationship has kind of the same kind of dynamic in which the female character is like, oh my God, what does this mean? What does that mean? Like, frantic while the guy's just like cool and dense and not noticing or whatever, or a jerk. At least this guy wasn't a jerk. I'm starting to get used to that kind of play in these stories, and it wasn't as bad in this one, but it's still enough, just slightly enough to annoy me. It's funny because it's like I liked when she would like kind of like get her horny levels up or whatever, and have the kind of the wolf imagery. I always thought that was really funny. But by the third time, I'm just like, okay, yeah, I get it. Like, like we keep going to this point and then, you know, she can't help herself and try and make another move. But obviously, you know, the cliffhanger at the end of volume two, I was almost interested enough to keep going to volume three, like Chris, but not quite enough to see what happens. One of the funniest, there are some really good panels. I really liked when she is about to say, "Did you pop a boner?"
Yes.
His hand covers the panel and her face. There's some really smart, fun things in this book. Yeah, it's very light in the drawing. Like as soon as they went to a concert, I'm like, oh, how are they going to handle this? It has so many ways of cropping out people and, like, you know, handling large crowds. Like, okay, I respect that. They still manage to show enough to be like, okay, you get the feeling of a concert. One thing I noticed, and this is something, there have been a couple of books with this style thing that was jarring to me, but there's a real art thing where these dudes have, like, tiny heads, tiny little pointy chins, and then giant thick necks. I'm reading this. I'm like, oh my god, they're doing it again. But then I start to really kind of focus on the silhouettes and realize that they're penises. These guys are actually penises.
I'm gonna need a citation. I'm gonna need a citation for the show notes.
Sorry, look at Midori-kun throughout this, especially any kind of like three quarter angle, like even hair, the way they've shaped his hair, it's very much a penis head. Very much a penis head. And whenever you get like the real thick neck look, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, that is a penis.
Have we uncovered the secret of Jose manga?
I thought you were going to call out the big ears, but oh, you surprised me.
No, I mean, I like the big ears, but yeah. Yeah, I couldn't stop seeing these dickheads everywhere on every page.
Oh my god, is this like those Marlboro ads where they would have like subtle penis? Like,
yeah, just kind of slip in the imagery. Oof. But one of my favorite unintentionally funny moments in this was when she was thinking about Midori-kun. And she goes, "It's so strange. I have so much fun when I'm with Midori-kun." I'm like, this guy is the least fun guy I think I've ever come across. he's just like this blank dude that just kind of comes in, won't touch her. We'll just kind of like talk about how much he has to work at being an idol. And she's just like, "I just have so much fun when I'm with him." Like, what? He's shown up at your apartment like three times and it's gone horribly each time. I thought that was very funny and a big disconnect between what they were trying to do and what they were actually doing. Yeah, when it gets a little serious at the end, where she's got the whole thing about like her smiling face and saying that's all she's good for, I was like, that felt a little kind of out of nowhere. I'm sure they explore it more later and it kind of retroactively makes more sense, but I'm just like, oh, okay, you're trying to make this serious now, but like you didn't really lay the groundwork enough to have that moment land, because she seems very self-aware. Up until that point, and then delivering with a smile, like, this is all I'm good for. I'm like,
it was a little creepy.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It pays off a little bit in volume three. Mm. Okay. I'll say that.
But yeah, I mean, I did like it. I think overall it's not my jam, but there are enough jokes and really kind of smart, fun techniques in it that kind of raise it to the level of enjoyable for me. So
I mean, this is her first series. That's what I figured out. Like, this is her first serialized series.
That's impressive.
And it's some of the art looks a little retro to me, like a little retro shoujo. Like it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like in The Clear Moonlit Dusk that Mika Yamamori can draw, like, wow, her art is gorgeous. This one is kind of more just kind of fun, but she has fun with it, you know? So it's okay that it's not like beautifully executed, it's just goofy.
Yeah, there's some consistency issues. Like I think the secondary boy band, the mean guy,
Soji, yeah
he tends to change a lot kind of throughout. I noticed like there wasn't a lot of consistency with how he was drawn, but yeah,
I just recently went down the boy band rabbit hole, which is really bad.
Is that a boy band rabbit hole?
It kind of is. It probably is. I mean, thankfully, I haven't spent much money on it, so I'm still safe.
Wait, much money?
Ooh.
Much money.
I haven't bought any fan goods, no DVDs, nothing. I have bought some songs on iMusic, though. So that's about the extent of it. Like, I started watching two shows. One is called Boys Planet, and the other one's called Peak Time. And it's like these Korean reality shows about boy bands. And one is all these young guys from, half of them are from the rest of the world and half of them are from Korea. And they battle it out to be the top nine to be a brand new boy band. The other one called Peak Time is about a bunch of boy bands who have never quite made it. Either they're never quite got the hype they didn't want it after they debuted, or they joined the military and then they broke up. Or things like that. So some of them are very young, some are very old, and they say this is their second chance to make it big. So watching these things, I started getting into like, oh, I didn't know there's this whole vocabulary of boy band, Korean boy band things. Like there's the killing part, like the guy who gets to sing the best part of the song. Like where he gets to be really sexy. It's like, and they all battle, like, okay, I'm gonna get the killing part, and then you're gonna get rap one, and I'm gonna get sub rap two. And it's like, there's a killing. That's what they call it.
Wow. I like that.
And then they have a whole name for like the young character, like the youngest boy in the band who is everyone thinks is really cute and wants to be their mom. So reading Midori-kun, and like as the series goes on, you're starting to meet more of the boys. Mm-hmm. Like you meet Soji, and then in volume three, you meet the cute one who isn't so cute. And it gets more fun. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I guess because I started to understand what that world is like, because before that I was totally making fun of my cousin who went to all the BTS concerts over the last 3 years. Like, she's 5 years older than me, which makes her over 60 now.
Whoa.
I'm sorry, Carolyn, I love you. But she flew to LA, she went to Las Vegas, she's seen all the BTS stuff, and she fangirls out over these boys who are like, I gotta say it, 40 years younger than her.
Wow. I mean, good for her. Yeah, it's hard for me to get my mind around it. The older I get, the less I'm inclined towards consuming any kind of entertainment material produced by anyone under the age of 30.
Actually, you know, a great example of what Deb's talking about is when the lady in this goes to the store and buys $1,000 worth of DVDs and movies and CDs to get familiar with what they're doing.
A very Deb move.
That's a Deb move. Because that's why you need the older fans, boys.
Yeah.
We got the money.
Sugar mama, but it's all just DVDs, CDs.
Plushies.
Amazing.
I love it.
Why did you try this one? Like, what got you in the door?
It was just random. Like, it just kind of popped up in my feed, and I thought, oh, I read the synopsis and I thought it could be fun. But you know, like, I read a ton of this stuff, right? I consume this like, you know, cows eat grass. And I just it's no skin off my back. But this one I liked a lot because, one, it was funny. Two, the female character was very sex positive without being super like fan servicey sexy. Like, I love the fact that she's a porn star, but she's not sleazy and she's not broken. She's proud of her work. And everyone at her job kind of go like, you know, good job today. You know, kind of like Fred Flintstone, you know, clocking in the stone card at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's not like gross porn star, like, oh, you know, like the manager's sleazy and the people are gross, and it's everyone just seemed to be just doing a job.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I do this work and it's made me good money and I'm proud of it.
And we don't even really see it.
Like, I like that.
You see tiny bits of it, but it's not.
Just little bits, but like, you know, the most risque kind of parts of the story is like her just kind of unbuttoning her shirt a bit more than you'd expect. It's just like, oh, okay.
It's like if you compare it like with Urusei Yatsura, right? Or Lum, where Lum is like, darling, and she's like all over him, right? All over the boy, right? Where this one, she's like, you like me, I like you. Let's have sex, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's remarkably mature in how it like treats sex work and how it treats like female desire and how it treats the female characters on the page too. I mean, I don't know that we've read a proper, like, women's comic, which is to say, Mm. Oh, no, we did. We read, what was the one? It was the sponsored read from Viz that was just like, Yakuza Lover.
Yeah.
We read Yakuza Lover, and that one's like filthy on the page. And I was kind of honestly waiting for that to happen here. Like, I was flipping the page going, okay, here's where it becomes a ladies comic, because it's that kind of comic is so huge here. And it's like not talked about. Like, I think media for women in general is kind of underplayed and not really talked about, especially coming from Japan. And it's only because BL, like, this is me going way out. So the certified BL experts and literal professors that listen to our podcast, first off, thank you. Secondly, feel free to sound off in the comments, but BL was weird. I think BL was so friggin' weird to North American people that it got written up. It was like, two men having sex for ladies' amusement, and this is a comic book, and it's like not just a comic book, like, but huge, like 30% of the market of manga in Japan.
An industry.
Like, it's a huge, yeah, it's a whole industry. So that got talked about, and that became like the discussion point about like lady, like what adult women are reading in Japan. But like hetero ladies comics are also huge here, and they are just as they run the line from this, which is pretty innocent, to sexy, let's say. Let's keep this podcast PG. I'm doing real good at not swearing.
There were three yet, X's in that sexy. I could hear it.
Sexy comics. And I was really expecting this to become that, sort of on the line of Yakuza Lover, Midnight Secretary, the other ones that Viz have done in their adult ladies line. And it didn't. I was shocked, actually. I was flipping. I was like, oh, we get to the actual AB scene. And it's like, oh, it's kind of tastefully cropped close-up panels on her face and stuff. Okay. And suddenly I realized, like, lightness from the cover designs to the interior, like page designs, to the way she draws, to the story itself is kind of the theme of this. It's like, we're not going to get too heavy into anything. We're just going to be like, yeah, sex work is work and I make a great living off of it and I'm not ashamed. And that's the only thing we're going to talk about sex work. Like, we said the thing we're going to say, and then it goes on to the next one. And there's like, yeah, it's a fascinatingly light comic, like to toe that line.
It's funny, like when Deb read the back of the book about how he can't be seen with her because she's a porn star. I'm like, well, that's not really, like, that didn't feel super correct, because the main thing is just like, he just can't have like the distractions, and he can't be touched by anyone. Like, it doesn't dig in too much into the fact that, you know, oh, the porn thing is the real problem.
Well, that's a big deal in the first chapter. Yeah, and the Soji chapter. Soji's introduced.
Yeah,
he brings that up again. But I think that might be a cultural thing. I think it's just, if you know idols and you know Japanese culture, being spotted with an AV, like an adult video actress, is a big deal here. It's like front page news. Like, this, like, because it's supposed to be these completely separate industries. Like, this one silo of taking your clothes off, which is fine, you know, the media keeps saying, but like, and then the other silo of like pure, you know, untouchable boy bands. And they, if they touch, it's because something terrible has happened and someone's been knocked up, or like Yakuza, like it's because of like the like nefarious influences.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like a cultural touchstone that was just like, it's there, but you don't really have to hype it up here in this story, because if you're reading this in Japan, everyone just kind of gets it, is my take.
Yeah, place it really light. I mean, let's be honest, like, working in the porn industry is not always so, you know, I'm just going to the office, I'm going to clock in and clock out and do my job, and the producer's going to say, you did a great job with this, right? Like, it's very sanitized.
Yeah, this didn't feel like a decision between mature or immature. It was a decision between, like, how far do we want to go down this path? Like, I think you're right that it was kept light. Like, cause it's like, oh no, this is just like, this is the setup. We don't want to go too deep into this. They actually went kind of deeper into the idol stuff with his like stalker and what it takes to be an idol than the porn stuff. The porn stuff feels very, very secondary in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just happens to be her job.
But I enjoyed that because it kept it, even though sometimes it veered into darker territory. That kept it interesting for me, or at least it gave it enough spice or a little bit of seasoning of something different than just being this wacky wham-com, right? Where like, oh my God, I can't even touch him. Or like, oh, you know, like the part where he's he's collapsed in the hallway and he says, "Don't touch me."
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
so she drags him by his backpack strap.
Yeah.
It's almost like the ludicrous element they introduce is that they both respect each other's jobs like a lot, like mm-hmm. enough to not break their rules, but they still want to test the boundaries a little bit, which yeah, is kind yeah. of funny in a way. Mm. She's like always yeah. trying, like the wolf thing. I'm going to do a very rare thing for manga explaining and disagree with Chip. Like I like the wolf gag because it shows the perfect spectrum of how horny and weird the book is going to get. Because on the other side is the Red Hot Riding Hood wolf from the cartoons. Mm, and then yeah. there's her version of the wolf. And one, like both are very horny, but only one is like, you know, hooping and hollering and like wagging their tongue and stuff like that.
Mm. I like the wolf gag. I like mm-hmm. the wolf gag. It wasn't the wolf gag that I had issues with. It was just the fact that the repetition of her being like, "We should have sex," just kind of hitting yeah. that. But I thought the wolf stuff was good. So we are in agreement still.
David. All is right with the world.
I think dress him like Little Red Riding Hood too, which I thought was such a cute,
a
cute touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah,
that's really good.
That's all I wanted.
Like
to
it
add.
Really is the same joke executed like in completely different ways. It's kind of great.
Mm. Yeah. I wanted to say my favorite thing in this was Milk.
Oh yeah, do tell.
Melon's new friend, Milk.
Oh yeah,
the other porn star.
Mm.
I like it because when she was introduced, I was just kind of like, oh boy, okay, yeah, this is going to be like, she's going to be the problem character and they're going to fight over this guy. And then, no, they become like friends and they go to the concert together. But her turn when she thinks that she could possibly, you know, like the same boy band member as her is so funny and so intense. Like, I can't be friends with someone whose favorite is the same. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really liked her as kind of like the potential problem for down the line, but not for the reasons you think initially.
I like her because like there's the bit where our main character explains like her stage name is Melon Kotobuki because she mentioned she liked sushi and sweets and it's like a pun.
Yeah.
So is milk one of her favorite foods?
Yeah, right. And
her last name's also a pun.
Amazing.
Yeah. I laughed out loud when they said this is our new performer, Milk. I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. Like, yeah, of course, like milk's her favorite thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that was a good joke.
I enjoy Sochi a lot because
Sochi, yeah.
Because like Midori-kun is a little dense. He's sweet, but dense, but mm-hmm. not in the same way that like in shonen manga, harem manga, where the boy is dumb and you're like, what does any girl see in this guy, mm. right? With this one, it's like, oh, no, I get why she likes him.
He's hot dumb.
He's hot dumb.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, but he's kind and he has some balance.
And let's not forget, he's so fun.
He's so fun. So anyone, I wanted to ask, you know, you want to call out, if you haven't already, your laugh out loud moment, like the thing that you thought was really funny in this book.
Oh, the milk thing for sure.
The part where they watch her porno together.
Yeah, that whole scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
tell
the whole more. Time I was like, this is an amazing seduction trick because it's so obvious that like, it feels like a trap, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
But he's so innocent that it just sort of like bounces off his defenses.
Yeah.
And when he's like, I need to go and watch this alone at home, I was like, wow, they are really going there with this one.
And he's like, and he's so amazed. He's like, I saw you completely naked now. And she goes, well, this yeah. is porn. You get naked. That's how it works. And it's a funny little detail is that the roses are black in the background all of a sudden.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The bit where he gives her notes on like how to perform and like to turn on her audience more, I also thought was really funny. Like that whole,
yeah.
the whole concept is just out of this world. Super good.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
I liked that a lot. And I wanted, like, and not in a funny way, but I wanted more of that. Like, he is thick. He's a dull lad, but he has like an insane depth of knowledge. He's portrayed as having an insane depth of knowledge about his field. And it's like, oh, like I kind of wanted it to be closer to an explainer manga because that's the manga I've been enjoying the most. It's like, I want to learn more about boy bands. And we got little bits of it, but it was still really, really light. And I would have liked more of that. But a funny scene that I laughed out loud with was, he's the least popular member. Isn't that just adorable? talking about how Shoji Kun is like just like so annoying. No one likes him. It's like he's really good at English. His TOEIC score is over 900, but he's still unpopular in like heart emoji. Like it's just this idea that like this dude that was kind of crappy to Midori or was crappy to our lead
Misaki.
Yeah,
Melon
was crappy to Melon in the previous chapter. It turns out he's the least popular member of the band, so it's like a way to kind of get back at him a little bit. But then Milk is into it. It's just like the little scroll above her head that says "the many forms of love." That killed me. That was like, that was perfect.
I loved her explanation where she goes, "Midori is a gateway member. Settling for Midori Kun is like going to Universal Studios and only looking at the globe at the entrance."
But basically all I chuckled at almost all the Milk scenes of her explaining stuff. It like even like stands and ships and all that, like just so frantic trying to get this information out there. It was very funny.
The fan joke didn't go where I thought it was going to go with Bang and Wink.
Wink.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wink. Yeah.
I totally thought they were going to do like a wordplay on Bang, which I think is like an actual BTS song.
By the way,
it is an actual BTS song.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a sex thing. Banging. Yeah.
But the part where he gets like the porn moves too fast for him in terms of plot, like that, I think is my favorite joke.
That's also really good. Yeah. Yeah.
And like he's like legit like confuddled, you know.
Oh, confuddled.
Confuddled.
I love that.
Was that a word?
That's a brand new word.
I love that.
You're gonna find out.
I love it. That's so perfect too. That's so Midori Kun.
Yep.
I guess we could kind of go around and get some final thoughts on this one, and if you would recommend it to anyone, and who you might recommend it to.
Hmm.
Let's start with Chris because I heard from you in a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah. I would totally recommend this, but with the caveat that it's like it doesn't fully explore any of the ideas it brings forward. It's really a rom-com. I was thinking actually when I was reading the third volume, I can't remember who referenced it, but Moonlighting, a Sybil Shepherd, Bruce Willis. We referenced it in one of the episodes, I think season or last.
I think it was you and Chip.
Yeah, I think it has to be Chip because we're both old.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but like that, like, will they, won't they? They have a sort of like fun, edgy relationship. They don't really work together, but they see each other when they're at home. Like, but they're in the same field. Like, yeah, it kind of gave me those kind of vibes. And it's like kind of, but the lightest possible version of that. It's like a television. It's like a Thursday night, you know, NBC 8 p.m. or 8:30 p.m. It comes on in between Friends and Frasier. Version of an adult video actress and a version of like a boy band singer. And that's kind of fine.
Yeah.
I love that this kind of, as Steph said, like cows eating grass manga exists. Like this is going to be someone's like thing that they eat while like, I'm sorry, I'm in Tokyo right now. So let me say, this is going to be the manga that someone is like reading while they're sitting at the Starbucks waiting for their friend to arrive. And they are both super young and fashionable and 20. And it's like, oh, Milk got even crazier this, you know, chapter. I don't know what's going to happen. And then they talk about something else. It's that kind of manga. And it's the kind of thing that's missing, I think, a lot of the times from North American comics. That kind of like easy. I have arguments about this all the time with learned comics professionals. But yeah, I think North American comics is missing this kind of book. So there's this essay by Kim Thompson, the late Kim Thompson, who was one of the co-founders of Fantagraphics with Gary Groth. It's up on the Comics Journal website. It's called A Modest Proposal, More Crap is What We Need. This was released in the early 2000s.
I remember this.
And it's this idea that there's like a mushy middle of like just of like the 8:30 slot between Friends and Frasier of comics that exists in the really successful comics industries, which is the Franco-Belgian industry, the Japanese industry, the Korean industry now, and it doesn't exist in North America because that mushy middle that would be the like entryway, like light comics reading is almost exclusively taken up by superheroes, which is like so codified and has its own like things you've got to figure out to start reading superhero comics a lot of the time that it doesn't exist. And he brings up a couple of ideas of what those books might be, which is funny. I won't get it too. He's pretty derisive. Like, I don't know. It's the Comics Journal at the height of its being derisive about other kinds of comics days. So, like, it doesn't, not every aspect of the essay holds up, but the core idea is, like, there's this kind of gateway comic that we just don't have in English a lot of the time. And manga, I think, is really filling those gaps with not just books like this, but shoujo and shonen stuff. You know, reasonably relatable starting point situations that kind of get fantastical as they go. And it's really enjoyable. And it's not art comics. It's not, like, pretentious and not and overly scripted and, like, overly intense. And it's not, you know, like, dumb comics or either, like, where it's just, like, there's nothing going on. You just need something that's, like, you know, a 7 out of 10 movie that you go to see. 3.5 stars raised Roger Ebert. Like, that kind of thing. And it exists. It exists in every other industry that's successful because that's how you keep people.
I'm going to petition the Eisner Awards to have a Cows Eating Grass Award.
Cows Eating Grass Award? Like, just it.
Yeah, just for that, just for that level.
I think of it as a bachelor show from Futurama. Just like the, like, basic level of food that is fine. Like, you, it's like dog food for, you know, bachelors. And you just sort of add hot water and eat it out of a bowl like it's, like, meaty cereal. And bachelor chow is...
Yeah.
That's like my go-to.
Bachelor chow.
For, like, oh my God, I gotta work. I just gotta go to the store and get something to eat and not think about it. So my current bachelor chow is spaghetti bolognese that's available at every 7-Eleven and Family Mart in both Tokyo and Taiwan. So I'm set. It's like, yeah, it's $3. It's totally dinner. Great. Spice it up with a little hot sauce and a little grated Parmesan cheese. And I then sit back at the computer and keep working, you know, and then make up for it later in the week with, like, a nice, like, a real meal. But for Bon Dessiné, by the way, best bachelor chow book that I love, which is such a mean thing to say. There's a series of books called Monsieur Jean by Philippe Puy and Charles Barbarian. And it's just like this middle-aged dude that just is kind of hanging out. He's doing stuff. He has a relationship. It doesn't work out. He goes to the country. It's fantastic. D&Q published, I think, 3 or 4 story, like, volume stories of them. Did not catch on here. Everyone's like, what do I care about this middle-class French guy eating at nice restaurants? Like, F this book. I don't care about this. And it's like, yeah, it's hard to argue with, actually. But there's something about it. And it's beautiful, too. It's actually the cartooning and the color is really beautiful. But yeah, mushy middle. And this is, like, so that. And I love it. And I want to read the next volume now, whenever it comes out. So that was a very long-winded explanation to say, oh, that was pretty good. 7 out of 10. I'd read the next one. Yeah. So that's my thought. Anybody else? Anybody else got a final thought?
Who wants to go next?
I was going to say I forgot what my take was because Chris talked for so long. No, that was super good. I honestly can't follow that, but I think that this was super funny. There's a panel of her, like, angrily changing the channels on TV while cooking. And it's, like, just great cartooning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super good vibes. And the book is full of little bits like that. I do wish the porn aspect was a little stronger versus the idol aspect. Because I think that's, like, equally interesting. You know, how does this guy live as an idol and not seem to have any emotions? And how does she live as a porn star? And, like, what's fulfilling about it? Why did she choose it? I imagine they'll get there at some point. But it feels like a book for idol fans right now. Yeah. Not that it should be for porn fans, but, you know, like, a little mixing it up is always fun. Stories like this.
Yeah. Cause her job could literally be anything in this, really. Like, and it wouldn't change the story that much.
Mm.
So yeah.
Like, she could do lighting on porn sets.
Yeah. I agree with David. I retroactively cede my time to Chris.
Oh, wow. Okay, in that case, I didn't even talk about the art, which I wanted to talk about.
No.
The art? Sorry. You guys talked about the art. I just want, like, a tiny little bit about the art.
Sure.
It is serviceable. There's a couple of nice, like, really, like, nice, you know, air quotes, nice illustrations, but it's serviceable all the way out. But it has so much more personality than a lot of stuff in this space that was what was so surprising to me about the artwork is that, like, yeah, there's some stuff where she doesn't quite nail the illustrations that are on the page. She's not like Aruko who did
My Love Story. My Love Mix Up.
My Love Mix Up. But, like, it's good, but it is like definitely first book, and she relies a little bit on too much on tropes, but it's so interesting. I kind of loved that. I loved the faces. I loved the little insets. She's got great comedic timing, which for a Jose manga, again, was not expecting. It's like, yeah, it's just so fun, but also like Chip was saying, it's light as like, it, like not just light, but like, yeah, it's fun, but I'm not like, there's nothing there that you have to seek this book out for it. Anyway, okay, now I'm done for real. Yeah. that'll teach Deb to say, I haven't heard from you for a while. All right, here we go. Let's do this.
Quickly, my final thought are, as we discussed the book, I actually liked it even more than when I came in. Mm. So, yeah. Yeah, because the jokes, like the more I think about the jokes, I'm just like, oh yeah, no, it's actually a lot funnier than I gave it credit for. So I might actually keep reading just to kind of see where it goes.
I will say that if you pick up volume 3, it's really fun because they introduce the cute one, the cute member of the band, and he adds a little spice to the mix, which is right. Great. And it makes you go, oh, I wonder how the other two guys are.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a fun little ensemble comedy that just kind of builds. I mean, for a lot of these books, I mean, we can bring up Yakuza Lover because that's the one we all read. I mean, usually the girls are dumb as bricks, or they're just suckers for abuse or whatever, or they're just like, ah, I just want to slap you. This one, no, I actually liked her a lot. Mm-hmm. I liked that she was, you know, I mean, sure, she had some personal problems with her family, and that's, you know, and she chose porn because porn let her make a good living. Mm. And she's matter of fact about it. You know, she's not messed up about her work, or she's not ashamed of it, which I thought was fun. I mean, a lot of times why I read Boys Love is because the characters are equals versus this. What tends to happen in a lot of this Jose stuff is like the girl has to be kind of stupid or kind of weak or is kind of constrained, you know, needs to be rescued or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's so boring.
Yeah.
So this one, I loved how it embraced its tropes and has fun with it. I read volume one. I thought, oh, this is cute. I'm enjoying this. And then came the last page of volume one. And then I was like, I'm sold. You got me. The part with the roses, like the roses became characters.
Yeah.
And the roses, like,
I love that. Yeah. Like when you get tricked into loving something.
I mean, and then there was the other side story where it's like one of the running jokes between them is that they both like this frog character when they were kids.
Mm, yeah.
And so Midori-kun goes and buys her one of the frog character notebooks. And then she goes, you're yanking my chain, aren't you? Like, she's like so pissed off at him for buying her this notebook. And then the backstory is him actually going to a Yonryo store. Sanrio, san means three.
Oh.
And so Yon is four. Yeah. So it's a Yonryo store. And then it's a cat. It's made after Kero Kero P, which is the frog character. Mm. So that's all this play off of that. And then so he went through all this trouble to go to the Yonryo store to buy this frog notebook. And she's like, what the hell is this? And so it's this whole story about how he feels he's unappreciated for all the work he put in. So I love her sense of humor. And I think it's really delightful. And it's smarter than it looks.
Yeah.
In that, you know, and that like makes fun of like boy band tropes, and it makes fun of shoujo manga tropes and characteristics. You know, every time you think, oh, it's going to go down this route where the new younger porn star is going to be a rival for Midori-kun, it's like, no, not at all. So the creator is very aware of the tropes and just kind of goes, psych, here's a left turn, and has fun with it.
Yeah.
I just find this, I've been recommending it to people who are like, oh, I want more Jose manga. It's like, go read this one. I think it's not too heavy, slightly sexy. But it's just a joy. Like, I've read it over and over again. And now I want to go back again because I didn't notice that little scene where the dog goes, I knew.
It's cute. There are two hilarious drawings of dogs in this book.
Oh, like, what's the other one?
The dog shows up. There's one earlier where I think he mentions his family dog, maybe. And it's like a ludicrous drawing. We'll have to find it for the show notes.
That was our take on The Untouchable Midori-kun. We will be back right after this, and I think we're picking some more books. Mm. Let's see what happens.
Why might you want to learn a new language? For some of us on Manga Explaining, we use our knowledge of Japanese on the podcast to compare the English editions of manga to the Japanese. And honestly, reading more manga natively in Japanese, or bande dessinée in French, or webtoons in Korean, it's definitely a dream, and a great way to get there might be Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is a trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert in language learning for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Rosetta Stone offers fast language acquisition, immersing you in a language with no English translations, an intuitive process, and it's designed for long-term retention. It uses true accent technology to give you feedback on your pronunciation, and it's convenient with desktop and smartphone app options for offline learning. It's also an amazing value, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Manga Explaining learners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Saving money on everything for your next project at Menards. It doesn't matter what job you're up against. Work's cordless power tools and lawn equipment have the power for you to get the job done faster and easier. The PowerShare 20-volt batteries run longer on a single charge, and they can be used with other tools. Check out Menards' entire selection of Work's cordless power tools and lawn equipment. Plus, the weekly flyer today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Okay, and we are back, and it is that magical time in Manga Explaining when we recommend three more books that Chip will either like, kind of like, or be deeply regretful that we chose it. But we'll make him like it. We'll make him read it anyway.
Never love, though, I noticed.
Yeah, well, you're a tough sell.
It's true.
Love is fake.
True.
Wow.
Ouch.
David, how you doing? You all right there, bud?
Yeah.
I'm great. How are y'all?
Let's see what kind of book David picks this week.
Oh, wait. You spoiled it. We're picking books. Deb didn't even say we're picking books yet.
Oh, sorry.
I did say that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, she shows where my head's at. Yeah. Sorry. David saying love is fake obliterated my brain. So.
Oh, God. How much shoujo manga do I have to shove down your throat until you stop being so cynical? Well,
now I want to be like a black hole of non-emotion.
Oh, don't make me sad. Well, right. Let's see. Who goes first? How about David? Since David seems prepared.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring out the big guns. And Chip, do you remember the issue of Daredevil where Inferno happened and he just kind of walked through the city and there was like the dentist who was controlled by a demon and the mailbox, that kind of thing?
The mailbox, the vacuum cleaner. Oh, yeah. All the hits. Yeah.
So imagine if Inferno happened in New York City and then it just kind of stayed and people went about their daily lives living alongside all these demons and stuff.
Amazing.
And that is Blood Blockade Battlefront by Yasuhiro Nai, who is mostly known for doing Trigun in the 90s. It was a very popular anime on Adult Swim. It just recently had a reimagining, like an ultimate Trigun kind of anime called Trigun Stampede. And all that kind of being in the air sent me back. I reread Trigun, the manga, and I was like, oh, I'll just roll right into Blood Blockade Battlefront and have a good time with it. And I was surprised by how pleasant it was. So I thought I should bring it to Manga Explaining because it also kind of doesn't have a plot. Like it's more right. about the setting than the overall story, I would say. Mm. And the setting is really fun. Kind of like a really demonic, other dimensional New York City.
So is this going to be like, is this like a volume one kind of deal?
Yeah. Volume one will get you, you'll get the gist, let's say.
Okay.
There's four chapters in it, maybe like 30, 50 pages each. It's like a pretty good chunk of stuff.
All right.
Fun drawings. It's a guy who's influenced by Mobius and Todd McFarlane. So there's like lots of meat in there for you.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah. Blood Blockade Battlefront, Volume 1
by Mobius and McFarlane. Wow.
You can really see it in some of the designs, too. I can send you some pictures of stuff. It's a trip.
All right. I like it. Who's next?
I'll jump in. I'm going to pick something I haven't read because I really want to read this. And again, the show is how I make time to read things that aren't immediately for work. And you really liked Tatsuki Fujimoto's Look Back a lot, which was good. I think we all really enjoyed that one. And then we read Chainsaw Man at the beginning of the season, and we were all like, oh, that's pretty good, but it's maybe not quite as strong as Look Back. And it did happen 11 volumes before he got to it. But when he did Look Back, he did another short story at the same time. Well, it was in a similar time frame that was like a done in one-shot story. And it's called Goodbye, Airy. And I was like, I want to read that. It's not coming out in print until June, but why don't we do an episode that'll come out around the same time as the manga actually launches? It's still available on the Shonen Jump app to read for free if you have a subscription, or with the $3 a month or whatever it is now. They raised the price from $2 a month. And I thought, you know, I think that's a nice short story. I think Chip will appreciate me not picking 500 pages of books for a change. And I want to read it. So let's do a selfish pick. And I think he might even like it because he liked the other stuff by this dude. It's called Goodbye,
Airy. What's it about?
I have no idea. It's a picture of a girl taking a selfie on the cover. It's by the guy I like. Well,
all right.
One of the many guys I like.
It's about filmmaking.
Oh, about filmmaking. He is a
big
film nerd. So maybe it's about.
Yeah.
That's my pick. Yeah.
All right. Deb, what's yours?
Okay. Well, you remember when we read Invitation of a Crab? Invitation to a Crab? And it was kind of like more this indie manga, and it was kind of surreal and about this dream world, but didn't quite make sense, but it was really fascinating to look at. And I kept referring to it as being just like Screw Style Nejishiki. And you're probably thinking, what is she talking about? Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to read the book. It's a short story, and the collection is of several short stories by this master of independent comics in Japan. He's kind of like if Robert Crumb traveled around the countryside and was depressed and had very violent sex with women.
Which is kind of Robert Crumb.
Wait, what?
Except in Chicago.
Paying for it? Is it Chester Burns?
Brown.
It's like if Robert Crumb without the bum obsession.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
So
it's Robert Crumb, but you're taking away the thing I like the most about Robert Crumb.
But see, what's really interesting about this is that the title story is kind of like this dream sequence where this guy walks around town. His arm is bleeding, and he tries to find a doctor. But when he walks around this town, all he sees are eye doctors. He goes, no, I need a gynecologist. And we don't know why. It's got a lot of really stunning scenes that are like, wait, how does it segue from this to that to this? It probably is one of the best representations of what it feels like to be in a dream.
Okay.
It's disturbing, but beautiful. The creator, he's really singular. He's influenced so many other independent comics creators since. It's really special. For years, he was in Raw Magazine, like a few handful of stories.
Including the title story here.
Cool.
Including the title story, but he refused to be published in English until very recently.
Hmm.
And he hasn't drawn since, I think, the 80s.
Oh, wow.
But he is revered as a legend, like just an incredible artist who has an incredible vision. So he has a really interesting story to tell. And his style, I think you have to see it at least once. It's really revolutionary.
Okay. Interesting. All right. This is a tough one. David knows me. He understands my soft spot for Ann Nocenti, John Romita Jr., Al Williamson, Daredevil. So by pitching it as that, and also it's Mobius meets McFarlane, which I've got to see. So Blood Blockade Battlefront is going to be my number one choice.
Mm. Ooh,
nice.
Deb, Robert Crumb, but no butts. You ruined your chances there by saying without the butt thing. So Screw Style's in last. And Goodbye, Airy is in second, because very intrigued by that.
All right.
But they're all strong picks this time out. I want to give you guys positive reinforcement and let you know that I quite enjoyed these picks already.
Oh, thank you.
I was thinking Yay. that Deb's description of Suge almost sounds like a dark Bill Watterson.
Oh, wow. Like an alternate universe Bill
Watterson. Yeah.
That's not a bad recommendation.
David, you're good at selling stuff.
I know, he's a master. I can't even come close to the book talking.
I think David may have just knocked Chris down to third place. Chris just gave us the finger. And by us, I mean me.
I don't know what you're talking about, Your Honor.
Just so our podcast listeners understand what we have to deal with here. Among explaining.
Am I second or third? I need to put it in the show notes.
You're second.
Monster.
It's permanent now.
Monster.
This last set of books takes us 3/4 into season 4. And nice. We're coming up on... I think we're coming up on our 100th episode.
Yeah, what's Michael Garfield Heathcliff episode is number 100.
That's epic. I'll pick me.
Good, I'm glad.
All right, maybe we can have like a quick shout out and go around.
Yeah, I can start.
Go ahead.
So as a kid, my mom did not let me watch The Simpsons because Bart Simpson was a bad influence. And now that I'm almost 40 years old, I'm finally watching The Simpsons from back to front.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Very beginning. Whoa. Yeah. I didn't know how many jokes that everyone tells every day of my life were stolen from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
That's what I'm learning on this trip through. So that's my shout out. The Simpsons. It's pretty good. It's going places.
I showed Andrew a bunch of The Simpsons in the same way. And he's like, that's where that's from? And I'm like, wait, but it wasn't that's where that's from. It was, wait. Did The Simpsons copy other people, or is this where this joke is from? Because he didn't know. And it's like, no, The Simpsons did it. Simpsons did it, which is itself now a reference.
Even like, what is it? The Dr. Zaius Planet of the Apes song?
Oh, my God. I love that.
Yes.
Kills me.
There are so many jokes where I'm like, how does anyone get this many good episodes in a row? You know,
just wait till season 13 and you'll be like, oh, that's how it ends. It ends eventually.
Yeah.
So have you watched the monorail episode yet?
Yeah, so no. I'd seen Monorail. I saw that before this current run. Like, there were, a handful I saw as a kid. There was, a Treehouse of Horror that I saw as a kid. Monorail, I knew. That was still pretty funny. But it's not even, the funniest Simpsons or the funniest Marge episode.
No, it's not the funniest Simpsons, but it's the one that really kind of, encapsulates the town.
Mm.
Like, that's the episode where you're just like, oh, okay, now I understand Springfield.
The one where they had the immigration episode where they're like, we should be kinder to our immigrants, like they're, you know, friends and family like we are.
Yeah.
And the Scottish guy gets deported at the end and no one cares. Amazing joke.
good.
Very scrappy young show. And also, I love how poorly drawn the first couple seasons are. Like, it's
like
they're so off model and weird looking, you know?
Yeah. It feels like it's one person doing it.
Yeah.
Just winging it.
Even before the first season, go back and check out Simpsons was originally shorts on the Tracy Ullman show. I don't know if Disney Plus has any of those shorts or not.
Yeah, there's a clip show that has some of those.
Yeah, and it's those early drawings are kind of awesome and how dashed off feeling that they are. Oh, they're so fun.
Yeah, even the voices are different. It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good time.
Good so shout out, The Simpsons.
Who has a more recent shout out than, 30 years ago?
I've got the newest possible shout out. It's so new, it's Shin, and that's Shin Kamen Rider, which I got to see in the theater.
Oh, shit, you watched it!
Here in Tokyo.
So jealous.
I was with Kamen Rider superfan Eric Koh. So we read Kamen Rider. We read the, big chunkin' hardcover. And this is just an adaptation of the first 3/4 of that hardcover, maybe the original Shotaro Ishinomori stories. It is adaptation and barely a modernization. So Anno directed it, who did Evangelion and who did Shin Godzilla. It is a wild movie. It is so charmingly lo-fi. Anytime they're on bikes, there's no CG. They're just riding Kamen Rider motorcycles through the forest and through weird industrial Japanese Inaka wastelands. It's
wow.
And then they'll have a fight scene that'll take place clearly in a studio, but it's and it looks a little bit like a Kabukicho Den of Inequity kind of a situation where he's fighting the bumblebee girl or it's a weird it's a weird movie. It's a weird movie that I think is so has no Hollywood gloss. That's the other thing. You watch a new Marvel movie and it's like so CGI and like so all the rough edges are kind of buffed out, but you watch like Iron Man and you can kind of see where they're learning what the formula is. That's a completely separate world of film to this movie. Like it, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like he looked at everything Hollywood was doing and was going, I am not interested. And so it's not a reaction to that. And it's just like, yeah. I've got this vision of Kamen Rider in my head. Here we go. And it's very pure on the screen. And there's a sequence with no spoilers where a sad monologue is delivered. The guy next to me just broke down crying. Like it was what? So sad to him as like a lifelong Kamen Rider fan that he was just like actual tears. Like,
wow.
It was in Japanese. I got like 1/100th of what was being said. My Japanese is not good enough to watch Shin Kamen Rider, but like, David, you've got to see it. You've got to see this because as a piece of film, as a counterpoint to Shin Godzilla, it's fascinating. And Deb, you didn't get to see it when you were here, right?
No, I was so sad because I wanted to be around when that big hype happened.
I was on a train yesterday, 3 weeks in, 3 weeks in or 4 weeks in, still decorated entirely in Shin Kamen Rider posters. It was weird. Like
so sad.
So it's huge here. And every week they have a new giveaway at the theater. So when I was there, I got a signed reproduction Shikishi signed by all the actors in the movie with like the Kamen Rider illustration. The week before there was trading cards. I think this week if you go, you get a poster. So it encourages repeat.
That's amazing.
Visits. Yeah. The Japanese cinema experience. I went to see the My Hero Academia movie in theaters here, the first one. They gave me a whole ass manga. They gave me a like 140 page like My Hero Academia Volume 0 manga for buying a $19 like ticket to go see this film. Like movie going here is next level. And then here you go. The Deb's got the program for Blue Giant. And it's like an actual old style movie program, but it looks like a record. We'll put photographs in the show notes.
That's really cool.
Like
that's awesome.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's wild. Like going to the movies here, if you ever get a chance and you have any idea what's going on. And I could follow the whole thing. I probably missed a lot of the subtleties of what was going on due to the lack of language skill. But yeah, it's the exact Ishinomori manga, but like on the screen, but not Hollywood, and it swings back and forth so wildly. Yeah, I'm still processing that movie-going experience, but I know I have to see it again with subtitles this time if I can find it. Maybe if I get to Taiwan, it'll have subtitles.
There was actually a clip that got released the week after it came out where it shows Kamen Rider just beating the hell out of the bunch of guys from Shocker.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and it's blood spurting everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
That's the first 3 minutes. And it was so violent.
Yeah, exactly.
That I thought he was trying to make like a commentary on what was going on in Hollywood cinema. Like, oh, all these punches and hits from these superheroes and like nothing ever really happens to them. But you punch a guy in the face and you've got like superhuman strength. You're going to shatter his face like it's going to be a Mark Miller comic. You know what I mean? Nope. It's just the movie. It's just like every once in a while, there's like extraordinary, like bright red blood soaked violence. And then it goes into like the next thing. And it's bizarre. Yeah. Shin Kamen Rider. You got to see it. There's something going on there, especially if you listen to our Kamen Rider episode. Subtle plug.
Wow.
I would bring a flask to the movie theater when they have it. I will definitely be there. That's how I watched Tron. I bought a flask of whiskey and I had a roaring good time.
You shot every time Kamen Rider is sad and you'll die by the end of the movie. It's a weird movie.
I think the North American release is May 31st. Oh. We're going to do like a little limited
what?
You know, usual thing. Yeah.
Oh, I am so there. Chip, do you have any shout-outs?
Because I flew to and from Barcelona, I got to watch movies on the flight. So I actually got to consume some media. On the way there, I watched Bros.
Oh, you watched
Billy
it.
The Billy Eichner gay rom-com.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff in there. But yeah,
it was fine.
I don't know if Billy Eichner is the charismatic lead that we want him to be. But I will say watching a movie with a gay threesome on an airplane screen is a lot of fun.
Yes.
As they're serving you dinner. And then on the way back, I watched Tar, the Cate Blanchett movie.
Mm. Oh, I want to see that so bad.
Which is amazing. It's so good. And I really need you to see, I need all of you to see it so we can talk about it.
Okay.
Because the ending is very much in our wheelhouse. It's very, yeah, ooh, it's awesome. It's really good.
The all I know about the movie is basically the ending, which is about, I'll bleep this.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued now.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So yeah, wow. Those are my shout outs. Taking a flight and watching a couple movies.
That's the first time you've done that in a little while.
Yeah. Like
you haven't flown overseas. And it's true. That's your first trip out of Canada, right?
Yeah. I've gone back and forth during COVID from West Coast to Toronto. Mm. But yeah, it's my first overseas flight. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
And somebody died on my flight. So yeah. So maybe it was a bad sign. I don't know.
Yeah. Never again.
These guys know about it. I'm not going to tell everyone, but yeah, it was an experience. After I watched Bros.
Well, at least it was after, because that would make a real weird ending to that movie.
It's true.
I've been trying to sue Bros to get a little bit of their profits, just on, you know, trademark reasons.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Nothing going so far.
Deb, what's your shout out?
Well, I was going to shout out something, but I'll save it for next week for the villainous episode, because there is this one webtoon I've been reading that I swear to God, it made me throw money down and I wasted a whole day reading it. So, but I'll save it for next week because it matches beautifully with the villainous story. So instead,
I like the foreshadowing.
What shall I write about? Well, I bought another Boys Love manga called Midnight Rain.
All right.
Two guys down on their luck and they hook up in a laundromat. It is really sexy. It's a one volume. And I love the artist comment, which is, there's a lot of facial hair in this manga. Please enjoy.
They know their audience. Wow.
It's by a Korean artist, which is interesting. CTK.
Oh.
It's interesting because whenever Jenny at Sublime is asked, why don't you publish more Korean comics? She says, because we don't have those relationships.
Mm.
But if it's published in Japanese first, then we can do it.
Mm,
okay.
And so this is one of them. It's cute. There's this whole scene where the guy is holding the other guy and his shirt's up. And then they have a little omake cartoon in the back where he's like holding up the shirt. And he's saying something kind of like, am I going to take his shirt off or am I putting it on? Which do you think it is? And the other guy goes, I'm freezing, damn it. And then there's this other lovely scene where the cat in the manga is biting the guy's head. Which I can,
cat.
Oh,
I can definitely relate to. Anyway, it's a delightful, it looks really heavy. I think it's a nice, interesting read. It's a little heavier than Midori-kun, but scratches that itch.
Wow, what a euphemism. We haven't read a BL in a while, actually.
Yeah.
That one looks good. There's a lot of facial
hair. If you guys are up for it, I can always find more.
I was going to say, yeah, you prudes just never recommend them.
Wow.
Okay. Oh.
All right, yeah, game on, bro.
Game on. There you go.
All right. Well, that was a fun-filled episode of Mangasplaining. Stick around for more next week when we are going to go down to the land of villainesses.
Mm.
Ooh. Stay tuned.
This has been Mangasplaining, episode number 97, The Untouchable Midori-kun by Toyo Toyota. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga version of My Life as a Villainess, All Paths Lead to Doom, by Satoru Yamaguchi. Want to pick up a copy? Check out a comic and manga specialty shop near you using comicshoplocator.com, or check your local library for print and digital lending options. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com, and check out our newsletter and digital publishing company at mangasplainingextra.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. It doesn't matter what job you're up against. Works, cordless power tools, and lawn equipment have the power for you to get the job done faster and easier. The PowerShare 20-volt batteries run longer on a single charge, and they can be used with other tools. Check out Menards' entire selection of Works, cordless power tools, and lawn equipment. Plus, the weekly flyer today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.